accession number 20510, reel 4.
Oh, yes, yes. Reel 4, Peter Harbour. Okay, Peter, so we've just done the bit where you were injured. So when you came back from your sick leave and you got married as well, where did you rejoin your regiment?
In Hamburg.
Mm-hmm. Where were they exactly? Where were the regiment when you rejoined them? Where were they based?
Well, in Hamburg. They finished up in Hamburg, mm-hmm. after they'd gone through Germany. And we from there, I remember I was sent off to a DP camp. To do a picket duty, and this is what we did while we were there. And I was in charge of a picket.
So where were you billeted then?
I think we were billeted in houses. I think we were billeted in houses, if I remember rightly.
With German people still living in?
Oh no, empty houses.
Right.
We used to be. We were sent off to picket DP camps and prisoner of war camps, and so many DP camps. They came from all nationalities, and there were murders going on. Even after the war, they were fighting in the camps, you know. And so it was a bit tough.
Which camp did you go to then?
I don't remember the names, though. I'll be quite honest. Names, I say, I can't recall.
So what were your duties as a picket?
Well, we didn't have... I don't think we had arms then. We might have done, I can't remember, but you're in charge of a troop. Sentry duty, in other words, you're doing. Instead, call it picket in those days, because we didn't do a sentry parade or anything. But so they called it pickets, but it's really the same as a sentry job. On the picket, on the camp entrances and things.
So what was the camp like?
Pretty horrible. I'll be quite honest, I think some of the things that we saw during the war, we automatically put them at the back of our minds. I know I did. It's only recent years that I've talked about any of it. And so it's difficult to remember. I think if you thought of it after the war, after you came out of the army, and thought of things that you saw and happened, I don't think you'd go around the bend. I mean, today they're having counselling now. Didn't know counselling in those days. We had to get through it.
So what was the camp like? Was it in a barracks or was it an open space?
Oh, yes. No, it was... They had just had Nissi Nuts and people wandering around, you know, kind of not knowing where they were half the time.
How had they got there, were they?
I think they were... The Germans had put them in their army to make up the number, half of them. So they were displaced persons. I mean, they grabbed anyone who'd fight for them towards the end. I think that's what happened, personally. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they got there, really. But that's the way I would think they got there.
Was it all men?
No, not all men. I don't remember what proportion of men to women there would be, but there were women there.
And children?
I don't remember.
So what was picket duty like?
Well, it was just normal sentry duty, really, but you had to keep your eyes open in case anyone was up behind you trying to pin something off you. I mean, they would pinch and rob and kill if they had to get what they wanted. So you had to keep an eye open for them. It was really...
You'd heard stories of that, had you?
Yes, I saw some of it, not the killing, but I saw some of the thieving and...
Like what?
Clothes and things like that, you know, like I say. Whatever they could get out of, really. You know, if they thought they wanted something and they fancied it, they didn't care if they got it.
What did you think of the DPs?
Sorry for them. Very much. Very sad. But what could we do?
I mean, they try and escape.
Not while I was there. Not while I was there. But, I mean, when you think of the life you've had yourself and what they've been through is unthinkable, really. You know. I mean, I say I put it all in the back of my mind. And that's why I can't remember what sort of I went on.
Did you talk to any of the DPs?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I wouldn't be able to anyway, because nationality. I mean, you can speak pidgin English or something like that, but you can make... So you make, used to make yourself known in some way, and you always do. But not to order conversation of any sort, yeah.
What was Hamburg like then?
Flattened. Completely flattened. I think there was one church I noticed was standing during the time I was there. It was a terrible state. It was literally flattened.
What was your reaction to seeing that?
Well, we'd seen it all the way through, hadn't we? I mean, not on such a big scale. We'd seen other towns. And it came natural to us. We started off seeing small things in Normandy and building up to big things as we reached Germany. Because Germany certainly had a belting when they, towards the end, with all the bombing and going on.
Did you see the civilian people in Hamburg?
Yes, we made friends with one or two. You say about girls. I mean, I met a couple of girls, they were very pleasant. They didn't want to walk any more than we did. But they started to go in the stride, didn't they? I mean, I only met them casually, but I mean, because we weren't there very long in Hamburg. But I mean, from what I heard of the Germans from that day on, probably 50 or 60% of them didn't want the war any more than we did.
What sort of a life were those people leading in Hamburg then? How difficult was it for them?
Well, they're all down in the basements, in the cellars, and they came up like a lot of rats coming up, head of the earth. And it was surprising how well dressed they were. Quite honest. I mean, they seemed quite pride in their dress, and I think that was a wonderful thing, really, for what they'd been through.
How were they managing for food and water?
Very, very poor. I mean, they'd give anything for a bar of chocolate or a packet of coffee or something. I said, we used to barter in those days. Barter with coffee and cigarettes and things like that.
Were you good at bartering?
I wasn't, no, I wasn't. I was very slow. That's why I've never done any good in business. I've been on my own in business for about 10 years, and I'm afraid I'm no good at bartering.
How did the people who were good at it, what did they do?
Good at what?
How did the people who were good at bartering, what did they do, and how did they manage?
Oh, they were getting all sorts of things, cameras and watches, and just for a bar of chocolate they get a watch or a camera. And not only a cheap camera, but they get Leica cameras and everything. I mean, I had the chance of a Leica camera, but it was by a friend of mine who was bartering for them. It didn't come off because he'd promised them when I was coming back over to being deported back to England. And that sort of thing they went for. Cameras, watches, and anything of value, you know. And they'd give anything.
So when was it that you went back to you arrived in Hamburg?
Well, 2 days after the war finished, so it would have been June sometime, wouldn't it? June the 7th, would it be? Was it the 5th it finished? I think it was, wasn't it?
So after Hamburg, where did you go then?
We then went in transit down to Luxembourg. Düsseldorf.
Right. What did you do there?
And we were then at a little village called Overdinkel. Oligs, Solingen, which is a few miles out of Düsseldorf. And Solingen is what they call the Sheffield of Germany, where a lot of all the penknives, that cutlery and everything is made. And as I was saying, we were billeted. I was billeted in a house where there was a factory at the back. Have I told you that before? So I won't repeat it.
Yeah. So what was the billet like there? What were the living conditions like for you?
Well, we cleared the houses. It was just cleared out. And of course, we only had palliasses and are already the normal living facilities that the army have. But it was nice to be in a house instead of in the bivouacs. Yes.
So where did you have your meals?
We used to have a canteen. We used to have to queue up for their mess tins, and at that time we did, yes. Because I don't think we had a sit down meal at that time. A long time after that, we eventually had a sit down meal with the troopers' mess and everything. To start with, we were queuing up for our meals.
And what were your duties while you were there?
I'll be quite honest, I didn't have many. I wasn't, for a period of time, I was off sick, actually. I had a terrific toothache. And I went to the dentist, or the military dentist, and he said, I can't take it out. He said, you've got an abscess behind it. So it went on for weeks. My face was out, twice as big as it normally was. And I couldn't stand it any longer. I went to him and I said, look, you've got to do something about this. And he took it out. And I went a week because I couldn't stop the bleeding. So I went permission from my CO to go to a civilian, because you had to get permission then, go to a civilian dentist. And he immediately had me in hospital, and I was on drips for 3 weeks to clear it up. And I had gingivitis in it, didn't I? But what had happened, the military dentist, I had a bit of sore around the gums, which was the abscess. And he treated it for gingivitis. And he treated it with neat. Instead of diluting the treatment, he gave it me neat. It made my love. All my mouth went red, raw.
So
I was off for about three or four months. I went down to I was fit then. I was 12 and a half, 13 stone. I immediately went down to 11 stone overnight, but within the bed, 2 or 3 weeks, because of it. So I didn't do a lot of duties over there when I was there.
So when you were fit, where did you go back to then?
I still went back to the regiment after I came out of hospital. But
was that in Düsseldorf?
Well, in Oligs, Oligs, near Düsseldorf, right. Of course, yeah. I played football on Oligs Stadium for the regiment. And, And then I don't remember what date. We had instructions to that four NCOs, corporals, from five reconnaissance regiments, making 20 of us, were joining up and just reported back to England. And the intention was that we came back to England to be made up to sergeant and posted out to West Africa. I don't remember the dates when I left the regiment, but the night before I left, a couple of my mates got hold of me and we went around the sergeant's mess, the corporal's mess, the officer's mess, and the trooper's mess. And of course I don't drink. And they plastered me with vodkas and snaps and all sorts of things. They were spicing my drinks. And I woke up next morning with the head as thick as a... It took me 3 days to get over it. Travelling on a 3-ton lorry, a tailboard of a 3-ton lorry. It took me three, I was sick for 3 days.
Where were you travelling from?
From Dusseldorf, right from there.
To?
We went into a holding unit, but I couldn't tell you where it was. And we got held up there for 3 weeks. And I didn't smoke, but everyone else was smoking there, so I did start. It's the only time I ever smoked. And my cigarette was out more than it was a light, but it was only to keep up with the Joneses, I think. And after 3 weeks in the holding unit, we were posted back to England and to Catterick Camp, where we were given 14 days disembarkation and 14 days embarkation, all thrown into one. I was home 3 weeks and I was recalled to Catterick. The draft had been cancelled, fortunately. I didn't particularly want to go to West Africa. And we were there, I think, a fortnight back at Catterick. And we were all posted in different directions and different areas. And a friend of, we became very good friends of another NCO from the 49th Recce. We were posted down to Longcross Holt, experimental fighting vehicle proving establishment at Longcross Holt in near Chertsey, Sunningdale and Chertsey, that area. It's closed up now, it's all overgrown.
So what exactly were you doing there?
We were testing all the new fighting vehicles that were coming on to into action. The Centurion had never been in action. And they had the first ones there. We would take on the Downs and test them out. And I mean, I didn't know much about armoured tanks then, but being made a sergeant, I was put in charge. vehicle commander, they used to call me. But I mean, other people did the work, reading all the graphs and the charts and everything. But and I had a good time there. It was half civilian, half military, you see. And actually, as the military got demobilized and they were living in the area, they became civilians in the camp. And I had a lovely time there. Actually, I won one of those cups or my medals from the football team I played with there.
And that was called
Longcross Holt. There was a railway station there. Fighting vehicle proving establishment, it was called Longcross, between Chertsey and Sunningdale.
And how long were you there altogether?
Well, about 9 months, 9-10 months. I used to come on, leave on a Friday night, And there used to be a group of us used to meet on Strabo Station. We had the last train from Strabo Station to Reading, which was the changing over the south, the southern line. Used to be 6:30 in the evening. So we used to get up on the Strabo Station, and there were about six of us, Air Force and my Army personnel. I'm friends with one or two of them now from those days. But we used to go and catch the 10:30 in the evening to Gloucester and get on the London train from Gloucester, which stopped at Reading, you see. The others all used to go through to London. And used to stop in Reading, and I used to know the train to go on because there were no night trains from Reading to Southern Line until 6:30 in the morning. So I knew all this, where the station, where the train used to station, and I used to get in there, get my head down, and have a good night, 3 or 4 hours sleep. I used to wake up at the station and uncross. I had a good time in the Army, really, I'll be quite honest. No regrets.
Going back to France, was being in action anything like you thought it was going to be?
Pardon?
Was being in action anything like you thought it was going to be?
Not to me, because I didn't see half of what other people did. I think I had it easy, I'll be quite honest. I saw some of it, but I mean, I did very little close-up fighting. I mean, I was close to the Germans, but I wasn't there. That wasn't our job, unless we got into difficulties. Our job was to seek, see, and report back.
What sort of a briefing would you get before being sent out?
We were given map references, and the general, because we used to have our maps, and we were just given the job of a map reference, a journey, and a road, or a journey, and just go and sort out what was in front of us. Otherwise, unless we did it, no one would have done it before us. Who had done it before us to tell us where to go? And that's what we were there for, weren't we? Don't get me wrong, that isn't all we did. I mean, we did traffic control in lots of cases when we were back in Harbour and things like that. I mean, we did backup for other units. I mean, we didn't do just reconnaissance work.
When you were doing a recce, how would you bring the information back? Would you use photographs or...?
Radio mainly, giving map references and everything. You couldn't do photographs. Photographs weren't thought of then. No, radio, really. Mainly radio, yeah.
Can you remember any particular incidents when you saw, some particular German,
Vaguely, but it's so vague I can't give the details of it, Mm-hmm. You're going to, I should remember, it's 56 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, no, my mind's, like I say, I can't remember my own name sometimes. I do, though. I meet people and they say, hello, Peter. How keep in? Well, I know the face, but I don't know the names.
Yeah.
Mind you, a lot of people, there's about half of Worcester know me and I don't know them. I know the faces, but I don't know the names.
So, do you remember what, when you were in Hamburg, how did you manage for sort of washing and shaving and bathing and things like that? You were living in these empty houses.
Well, you improvise, don't you? You have to. I mean, we'd gone all through the war on the road. And not me particularly, but the others had. I only went halfway. But, you manage, you improvise. We used to have our little stoves occasionally. If you didn't improvise, you wouldn't get anywhere, would you?
What special things did you have in your kit to get you by, as it were?
Well, we had our first aid kit, you know, small pack. I can't explain it all, but it's certainly more or less first aid kit, bandages and things like that. Then you had your mess kit, tins, and you'd have your gas mask, of course, and little things that I can't bring to mind.
So you were really quite self-sufficient?
Oh yes, we had to be, really. To be.
As long as you could find somewhere to make a bivouac.
Well, I mean, we could have easily, I mean, a lot of our lads were cut off for days. Yes, we got behind them and we couldn't come back through them. I mean, I must be fair, I was fortunate that I didn't come and get tied up into that sort of thing. But I could easily have done. I mean, some of the things that went on, I could easily have finished up in that position myself. But I consider myself very lucky.
So, when you were in hospital in Worcester, did the regiment have any contact with you?
No, they were too busy, weren't they? I didn't. The only thing is, my mother and my father had a letter from my CO. I've still got it somewhere.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, Major Cresser. Yeah, we've good friends after. When we finished the war, when we used to go to the reunions, we were on personal names, and Major Cresser was my squadron leader, and we had a reunion at Cardiff, I forget the year now, and we had a special service at Llandaff Cathedral for the division, and we prayed it from the cathedral to the town hall, we prayed it outside the town hall. And the old brigadier came along with the mayor and everyone else. And of course, I was there with my badge in my blackberry and badge in, and a bit of badge in here. And my mate was next to me, Joe. He was a very tall fellow. But and the brigadier came along and he said, "Good Lord," he said, "it's a long time since I saw one of those recce badges." He said, "Major Gresson's in line here." And he was up on parade of the with the division. And a few seconds later, down came Buster Gresser and shaking their hands. And then we were making himself known, you know. Well, we knew him, of course, because, I mean, he comes to the reunions, or used to, and he's dead now. But after the parade was over, we got dismissed, and there was all the ladies all queued up there. And there was Lady Gresser, because he was Sir Greville Miggett. Gresser then, so he was made a knight before by that time, and his wife Lady Gresser was with the rest of the ladies, Mike, and so we went over and introduced us to the Lady Gresser and everything, and she got a black cardigan on, and I said to her, "A bit of Marks and Spencer's," and everything went quiet. Well, the lads went quiet. I said, "Well, it could be, couldn't it?" I said, "They presented it to you. They used to present it to you too. Well, down at Brighton when the bomb went off. And Buster was chairman of the Conservative Association. Then they were in the hotel that was blown up." And I was only joking with her, but I mean, it could have been. And she took it all in good part. First time we'd ever met her. And she said, "Oh, no." She said, "I was unfortunate in that way, I respect."
So what sort of a commander was he?
Oh, he was a great, great guy. He was a great guy.
Why was
he? He wouldn't ask anyone else to do something he couldn't do himself. He was actually in the boxing team. And he'd fight anyone. Buster. That's why they called him Buster, I think.
He was, remember him doing things.
Oh yes.
That most commanders wouldn't do.
Yes, Well, for instance, when I was telling you about the forward OP, he came up himself. He didn't send one of his sub-lieutenants. He came up himself. I mean, that's the sort of thing you do. I mean, the book is, speaks highly of him, what he's done and where he's led his troops. And he was a great guy.
And what did his troops think of him?
Oh, they thought the world of it. Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah. I mean, that's my squadron leader talking about. The CEO was different.
Okay. Any other officers or that you remember particularly?
Well, apart from the CEO, which was the Lieutenant Colonel Williams, he was a regular soldier and a terrific commander. I mean, he was a stickler for discipline and smartness. When the war finished, they chose from our regiment to do sentry duty at divisional brigade headquarters under Colonel Dempsey, Brigadier Dempsey, and they chose our from our unit to do the sentry duty because we were so smart in normal dress. So that's big result. That's the sort of officer he was, and yet they thought the world of him.
That's the end of Reel 4.